that would be a great career in the future. But, you know, we're going to be talking about careers here today. And so today, our panel is The Forgotten Trio, a spotlight on inkers, letterers, and colorists, which are really, really pivotal people in the comic book industry. So for some people who may have came before, I may ask some of the same questions. You never know. The answers may have updated, we hope. And while we're waiting for our lovely indie person to come, we will just start off. So, Dave Lanfear, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Look at your dress shirt, the sharpest dress letter I have I've ever seen.
I have to represent our craft.
So you are a veteran. I would like to say pretty much any DC Marvel book I think that you've read, Dave may have lettered it. One of my favorites is The Long Halloween by Tim Sale. And I loved it, read it over and over and over again. And when I started to realize I need to know more on the people who worked behind it, not just Tim Sale's name, I looked, it was Dave Lanfear. And then this was after we knew each other. And I remember telling you that I was just so surprised and I was so excited. I was like, I know the person who lettered this book.
I was lucky too. I was part of a team. We worked at Comicraft. And Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb were good friends with Richard Starkings. So it was Richard really that got the assignment. But I was lucky to get to do a lot of the work on it. And Tim art directed us, which is kind of a new thing for us. We hadn't had artists give us ideas about what the lettering should look like, but he had a very specific idea in mind of how everything should work. So it was one of the first times I realized that we're working commercially for someone else, and there's other people's input that matter, because up to that point, we had developed rules that we used in-house of how things are supposed to look, and he broke a lot of those rules, and it showed me that's okay, too. There can be different looks for how lettering can exist on the art.
So, LeBondure, how are you?
I'm good. Can everybody hear me fine? I know I have that Darth Vader voice. Luke, you are. I am your father.
So, okay. So you are representing our inkers.
Yeah.
What are some of your current books? Because you've got a great, great file. You've got a great bibliography.
Thank you. Currently, I'm inking Superb for Lion Forge Comics. Previously, I've inked Angela, Asgard's Assassin for Marvel, Smallville for DC, Stormwatch, Injustice, Arrow, The Incredible Hulk, Venom, Spider-Man, Deadpool. So, yeah, I've been across the board.
So, Kelly, how are you?
I'm good.
So, how are you? These two lovely ladies are our colorists. You're going to be representing our colorists. So, tell us some of the books that you're working on right now.
That's what I was just thinking about. I'm currently working on Bitch Planet and Rockstars at Image. Gotham City Garage just got announced at DC. I'm on that. And Shade the Changing Girl. And over at Archie, I'm on Archie and Josie and the Pussycats. And there's a new book coming out in December called Summit over at Lion Forge. And that's with Amy Chu and Deandra Simmons. I'm excited about that, too.
This is how amazing she is. You have to look at a list on your phone to know what are the books that
you're working on. Isn't that bad?
So, Veronica, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. And so, you were telling me about how far you had to travel. Where did you travel from?
Yes, I am from Argentina. I'm from Argentina.
Wow.
How long was that flight?
Actually, there's no direct flight, so I have to make a... From Argentina to Dallas, it's about 11 hours. Oh. And then Dallas here, it's about 3 more hours.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So, yeah.
So when I had asked a couple of friends who worked in the industry, your name popped up a couple of times. But what books are you currently working on? That means you're well-loved and well-received.
Well, thank you. I thank them, actually. And thank you, Bob, because I know he's one of the people who recommended me. I'm actually working with LeBon in Superb for Lionforge, and the first issue just came out, so and we just finished the second one, like rushing it, because we need to come here.
Right.
And I'm working on DC, the Red Hood and the Outlaws, the Red Hood and the Outlaws, yes, the Rebirth. And I've been working for like 4 years or five in an LGBT comic book. That is online and it's called The Young Protectors. And right now
hope year after year the answer changes. Is yes. Ooh, thank you so much for making it work. Oh, he just ran out. Okay.
That's nice.
But, my job here is done.
So one of the questions I like to ask every year, hoping that the answer becomes more positive and updates over the years, whenever people think of comics, they think of the writer and the artist. And then they also think that the writer somehow does the lettering, and the artist does the inking, the coloring, and, you know, pretty much everything. Some do, some don't. Do you feel that more credit could be given to you guys by the industry itself, or whether you feel that the readers need to be asking these publishing companies?
I have an answer to that. I mean, obviously, yeah, there's more credit that needs to be done. There's a couple of things. I think Comixology just put out a new form that's going to make it easier for publishers to actually be able to give out that information. But currently, right now, for Under Diamond, there's no column that separates out colorists. So in order to get a colorist credit in there, you have to be listed under artist. And I don't even think there is a letterer thing either. And for inkers, you're just listed under artist also. So that's an easy one for distribution and for publishers to actually have, like, a standardized form that includes everybody, but also it's a twofold with, like, the PR in the companies. Not certain companies don't want to list the entire creative team on the solicitations, so that's problematic. And I don't think it goes on the public, because if the public doesn't know that there's other people on the books, how can they, like, if they're not being told through the solicitations, how can they, like, expect to ask about it? So I think it's up to the companies, and I think that more change will be happening when really people within the creative team, like the writers, start coming forward and saying, like, hey, why isn't the whole team on this? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on here? So I put a lot on the writers and the PR. Not to throw them under the bus, but...
I have an answer to that too.
Okay, Dave, let's hear it.
It's down to the creative team, I think, a lot of times, to be able to support their entire team.
Yes.
So I've been lucky that I haven't asked, but I have been fortunate to be put on the cover with Shirtless Bear Fighter, with Mage, because of the people that are spearheading the project.
Yep.
So, right. And they're big enough that they can just tell the other people at the publishing company, like, this is the credits I want on there.
Yeah.
Right. Aftershock, thankfully, has been putting all
Aftershock's
of us on
great
covers,
about it, yeah.
Because Mike Martz, mm-hmm. he has worked at every different comic book company, so I think he's aware of how we all feel about it. He's been very supportive.
Correct.
Joe Pruitt, too, at Aftershock.
Image is really good about it, too.
Oh, yeah. No,
definitely.
Typically.
Image. Yeah. Well, because in Image, there's people like... Fiona, they recognize, they're like, you guys are superstars, and so then everybody goes on to do other things and go on and write, and in addition to being an artist, so they're like, okay, well, we need to support everybody.
Right.
This is an entire team. I think you're right, it's problematic at the Diamond level when the solicitations go out.
Yeah.
Sometimes the way lettering assignments get handed out, we're at the very last part of the line.
Yeah, sometimes it comes after solicitations even go out.
Exactly.
That's true.
Like 2 months after solicitations have gone out, then they're actually contacting the letter and saying, okay, we're about ready to go to press, you get the assignment.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I agree. I mean, you know, just to co-sign on what you said, is it is problematic in a sense. I think most publishers, in my opinion, they need to do a better job of promoting and letting the fans know exactly which area, which discipline, you know, what goes into that. What goes into being an inker or a colorist or even a letterer, you know. Everyone has pride in their job, you know, and they take pride in what they do. But it's hard. You have to find that within, you know, when you work in an industry, if you're not getting that recognition. You have to find that within yourself to still perform your job to the best of your ability despite that. And just like with any profession, you want to be recognized for your efforts. You know, you want to be appreciated. So it is vitally important that the publishers need to push that, which, like you said, some do. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some don't.
Oh, I also want to say Oni Press is amazing about it, too. Yeah.
And I, even working for Lion Forge right now, that is something that I give them a lot of credit for. It with the first issue that Veronica and I just did, when I saw the previews for it, it has all of our names on it.
Nice.
You know, and even with their solicitations, you know, and the press releases, they're talking about each of our individual disciplines, which is very important. You know, and that keeps the team together. That makes it more cohesive.
It makes you care more about what you're doing, too,
yeah.
Because you feel like you have more, like, stake in what you're doing,
right.
Pride in it, when you feel like you have the support of everybody that you're working with.
One other thing that I've seen, too, is Valiant Comics has been great at putting not just our names on the covers, mm-hmm. but also they go in depth about how the book is created, and they may choose 3 or 4 pages. Like, at the back of the Valiant series, there was a kind of a how we did it, and I've been fortunate that every editor that I've worked with at Valiant, there have been 4 different instances where they said, we're going to do that kind of thing at the back of the book, and here's your 3 or 4 pages that are going to be about how did you do the lettering for this.
Great.
So I appreciate that support, too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Veronica, do you think that means that?
Well, I actually agree mostly with them, with what they are saying, that we really also like the recognition from the people, and if we don't get the credit, enough credit, actually, me from being from another country is like even more difficult, because they, you can get to meet people and maybe make your names,
right.
shove your names around and everything,
right.
But me from Argentina is like really much more difficult, and
yeah.
if the publishers and we get that recognition in the books, and it would be easier for us, and it would be the recognition we would like to have.
Right. Sure, I can imagine.
So, you know, I wanted to show a little bit about Cliff's examples of what their work really means to us, because as readers, we get the final product. We get everything, and we don't actually get to see what the process is like as it goes through and through the eyes of them and the editor and the writer. So, Lebo, you sent this over to me. This is in his pencil. This is in his ink. So I actually had to show a couple for my friends who says, you know, this is the penciler's work, but the inker does such a great job. He can ink it so it looks like it's night, or he can ink it like it looks like it's daytime. Batman could be standing on a gargoyle at night, or he could be doing it in broad daylight for unknown reasons. But the ink, because the shadows and everything is so important. And I wanted to kind of for you to touch upon what you prefer in terms of, I have some inkers who are like, you know what, a penciler will give me something and it's so fine. I just trace along. And some will give me 14 bubbles,
right.
what looks like Superman's body,
yeah.
and then I just kind of have to use my creative abilities and do that.
That's very
what
true.
What do you prefer? Mm-hmm. Is this from inker to inker? Or what do you prefer?
For me, wow, that's a great question. Looking back on my own career, I pushed myself to be able to work over a variety of different penciler's. And I realized early in the business that in order to succeed as an inker, you have to be as versatile as you can be. You know, and no matter what penciler it is, you know, you got to try to make that penciler shine. So it's not in a sense of overpowering them, you know, with your inks. You want a equal collaboration with them, and you want to try to approach it from that sensibility. So to go back to your question, I don't necessarily have a preference. I've worked on pencilers who their work is very precise, it's very defined, and I've also worked with pencilers who are just very abstract, you know, and I've got to add things in it. And I think that's the difference where the terminology is that of an inker versus that of an embellisher. When you're embellishing the work, you're adding more to it that the penciler has just left like a framework, for example. Now, using the example that you have up there, the penciler on that is Chris Batista, which Chris is a very, very excellent penciler, in my opinion. His pencils, as you see, they're clearly defined. You know, he leaves really not a lot of room for interpretation. You know, he knows what he wants, but I know I'm on a professional and a personal level, so I know what he looks for as far as ink substance, you know, concerns. So inking his work, I know how to approach it with my own sensibility and to allow my own talent to come through. But the important thing as an inker to keep in mind is that every penciler is different. So you want to try to, you know, keep that communication open with him or her to bring out the best work possible.
Okay. And so we want to ask a lot of questions that will help people kind of break into the career. And for you, Inking, I've actually had people ask me, and I said, you know, I don't feel qualified to answer. I'm more of a fan of the reader. I'm a reader. They said, do I need to know how to actually draw, or can I just trace as a very advanced kindergartner?
No. I don't agree with that. I think you have to have a foundation in drawing and art, because, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but I've seen some inkers who basically trace, you know, and they don't bring anything to the work. And if you look at certain comics, you can see that. It looks very flat. It doesn't have any power or any depth to it. I think when you approach it with that sensibility, if you make your penciler happy, then everybody's happy. They're happy with what you're doing, you know. And you have to be pragmatic about it, so to speak. You know, you have to look at it with a certain sensibility that you have to have a deeper understanding of art. Because if a penciler, let's say, for example, they'll draw something and they make a mistake, if you don't know how to draw yourself, you obviously can't correct that mistake, and it'll go to print like that. And the next thing you know, you'll get an email from your editor, or maybe even a fan will say, hey, you know, I saw this, it was drawn incorrectly. You know, so it's helpful to have a good foundation in art yourself, you know, being an inker.
And Dave, with lettering, I say this every year because it just really kind of sticks out to me. There was someone online who wrote a comment that says, nothing screams a cheap comic book like poor lettering. So, and that was it. It had like 31 likes or something on that comment. Can you kind of expand more on that and why that person would say something like that?
I actually heard the same thing from a professor at Full Sail, which is an entertainment media college that's out in Florida. He said that he's teaching his class actually how to letter, because it's important for the whole process of putting together a comic book. And their impression, class after class after class, is excellent lettering makes a good story, and poor lettering takes you out of the story. So, and I think it's the case for any part of the craft. If you feel like what you're looking at isn't as professional, or it feels very amateur in contrast, you may have a tendency to not believe the story that you're reading in front of you. You can feel that in movies, perhaps, or TV shows. If you feel like an effect suddenly looks very artificial in the middle of a scene, it will take you out of the story, and you're going to notice the effect instead of what the story was about. So I think that's the case there.
Okay. And, you know, one of the things is, did you feel, I grew up knowing that letterers did it by hand, and now there's a lot who do it through the computer. And for you, do you feel like there's a loss in craft, or did you feel like, no, the computer, doing it on Cintiq, it makes it better? Lettering it by hand is old school and obsolete, it's not an improvement. Do you feel like there's a loss in it, or do you feel like they're two completely different things?
Every day, I still use my hands.
Ooh, okay.
That took a turn real quick.
All right. Let's not take it there, please. God bless you. No, seriously, I use a computer and a stylus and a mouse, and I use those to illustrate because I'm paid to illustrate what the author wrote, and I have to marry it to what the artist drew. So I try to take the attitude that years ago, when I first started getting into lettering, some of my favorite lettering was Bill Watterson for Calvin and Hobbes. But then I read a story about in an interview where he said that's the part of the job he hates the most. He loved all the drawing, he loved all the writing, he loved condensing the story into 2 to 5 panels. But the lettering just drove him up a wall. But I look at it, you know, and I've seen it for years, the lettering is totally his hand. The shape he drew for a finger may be the shape for a letter A. You know, it's his hand that's totally at work there. And so when I look at other artists' work, sometimes they'll have come to me and say, I want you to letter the story, and I'll come back to them and say, I want it to make it look like you lettered the story. You know, I want your design sensibility to be present in the page so that people are more involved in the story. And so that's the approach I take to anything, is I try to find the digital version of what they are drawing by hand. And then I try to put all that kind of organic work back into it so that I'm not just generically using the shapes that are available mechanically in the computer in Illustrator, which is what I use. And so I'm trying to constantly look at what they do on the page and find ways to incorporate it into what I draw.
Okay. And, you know, we see here some, you know, amateur lettering mistakes, obviously. And to also show, we also see some great examples of lettering as well. And because I know we started a little bit late, so I'm like, let's try to, and we'll keep going until we get kicked out. You know, I have some friends who feel that lettering, they were like, you know, seeing text to me, you have something like corgi or something like owly, which are wordless sequential art. They were like, you can tell so much of the story just through reading it. And some of them feel like, no, I prefer lettering. And obviously, I feel like with text and what you do, you would be biased. What would you say to those people who are like, you know, a silent comic is just as good as one with text and lettering?
The story needs what the story needs. It's how I feel about it. It's, you know, so I don't have an objection. Like, there was an era, okay, when comic books, the characters, Spider-Man might be swinging across the rooftops, and so there's one time scene that's happening, and it's him between buildings. But then the writers would write 16 thought balloons around the character, which, if you spent the time to read it out loud, you realize there's probably a couple minutes worth of dialogue in them thinking in their head. And so there's a kind of a disparity that we always seem to buy, which we are accepting of the fact that this moment may be a split second that we're seeing, but we're hearing a few minutes worth of thoughts. So, and I was always fine with that. That was just the comic books I read, and that's, I grew used to that when we were lettering comic books too. Now there's this thing where instead of using thought balloons, we use captions as a graphic device to kind of indicate. So if the characters, there's several characters in the panel, we can tell who it is that's thinking or who's narrating the scene. And then if there's competing narratives, we can keep those narratives straight. It gets a little bit like Skittles sometimes. You know, you've got a lot of colors on the page there. So that's where being a good designer comes into play, and that's always being aware of the page composition, trying to work with it, but still give people enough clues so that they keep the story straight. So I'm always there for the story, if that's me.
No, that makes
answers the question.
Perfectly sense.
Okay.
And so, Veronica, this one's one of your
examples.
That, and after you colored it, which is a huge pop. So yeah. I went, wow. You know, growing up, I grew up Western comics. So I loved it. And when I picked up my first manga, I opened it. I'm like, where's all the color? And I just could not get into manga until older. I didn't learn to appreciate it. But, you know, when you're in Japan, black and white's fine. Here in more Western culture, we prefer things in color. What is it that you feel about the readers that some would prefer color over black and white and some don't care at all?
Because
it's a huge difference.
Yeah, it's totally different because I actually think that, of course, I'm a colorist. And it's like when you see a movie, it's like the color for me, it's kind of like the music when you see a movie. It's like it gives you the chance to tell the story with giving some... to show you how to read it, maybe you can give some emphasis with some color in the page, and you know you have to make that very important because it's important for a moment or a phrase or a word or something, and you give, with the color, you can do that. Of course, you can do that also with the inks in black and white, but I think with the color, it's like more visual for the people, and I believe, I don't know, I prefer the color comics. I don't know. But I don't know. I do understand the people who maybe think that the real art is in black and white. I've heard that it, color is not necessary. But I don't know. I always prefer it, and I believe it's like that. You know, it's like it's It's like the music for the movie.
Oh, yes. That's an excellent way of putting it. And could you explain to people what is a flat or flat?
Oh, yes. The flats are like you get the inks, mm-hmm. and you just color the inside the lines, whatever, you're just separating first the characters, like the skin tone and everything. And then that's when you have the flats. Sometimes you may get some help to do the flats because you don't need to anybody to know how to do color or to give volume, or you right. just need to.
They're also called color separations,
yeah.
because that's literally, it's like the eyeball from yeah. the eye, from the hair, from the skin, from the shirt, and so you can just click on it with like a magic
you
wand tool
to
and render, yeah, and exactly. choose an actual color that you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you give the polish.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt. I was going to say that's an excellent question because you know Kelly brought up and you both can touch upon. You know what happens when it's Green Arrow standing next to Green Lantern and Green Martian. You know
they could be purple. They could be purple, teal, and orange in the flats. Like
yeah.
as long as they're separated, so that we can like actually.
Yeah. You just need to click and have the selection done, and then you'll
yeah.
just the color you want.
So the metaphor here is that I'm an old guy, so I used to cut briskets for airbrush
yep.
stuff.
It's the same idea, yeah.
Yeah, so you're just separating with a hard line an area mm-hmm. so that later you can select it, and that's a tool you've built. It's the handmade tool.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And, you know, Kelly, we're going to try to pull up your but you actually did several different books. So from what this...
That's a Bombshells page.
Yep, that's a Bombshells page. You have color like this.
Oh, this is lovely.
Yeah.
Which is so beautiful.
Thanks.
And then you also have... I apologize for everyone. So try to remember that. And then you have something, right?
Yeah,
like that.
And after
same colorist, two different books.
Yeah.
How do you choose the like the other one was much more subtle and new and kind of I don't know the correct terms for it. This one's much more vibrant and bright.
Yeah, that's
is that
really
something
saturated.
You chose? The writers chose you. The editors tell you to do.
Well, with the Bombshell stuff, like Sandy Jarrell and I have been working together for a couple years now, and he specifically came to me and for that kind of flashback sequence, and he said, like, hey, there's this amazing Russian illustrator called Bilibin, and I want to kind of riff off of the things that he was doing, and because we work together so closely, it's hugely collaborative, and the same thing with Fred Torres, who drew that. He and I had been working together for a really long time on covers and had finally gotten a like ongoing at Aftershock. And because of that, I knew kind of how I wanted to approach coloring him. And because he liked that, we had built that like collaborative aspect of it. And since it's a cover, I wanted to go crazy. Because, you know, like when you're looking at all the books on the shelves, you want stuff that like grabs your attention and pops out at you. And neon pink and neon green and yellow, like those colors print amazing. So, like really, really bright and saturated. So it is, it's totally collaborative. The more that I can talk to the line artist, I feel like the better the project becomes the final outcome.
So do we have any questions right now for them? Oh, wonderful. Gentleman in the orange, you, and there was somebody in the back end. Let's start with you first.
You're mentioning movies with respect.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is there a mic? Oh, yes,
there's
please.
Yeah.
There's a mic right in the middle.
Yeah.
Do you guys mind lining behind the mic with your questions, please?
So sorry.
Everyone can hear them.
You mentioned the movies earlier. I was wondering if you ever get ideas for coloring from how the movies use color and sort of tying through onto that. Personally, the microphone is great. and also, if you might consider how you apply color to doing something black and white, because certainly black and white movies have their own sense of coloring. And finally, if it's movies, way too many of them might be now use this blue filter on everything. Have you ever considered doing that sort of effect on a comic of having the entire comic tend toward the blue or the green spectrum? Sorry, a lot of stuff.
Yes. You told me first it was because if I was if I got reference from movies and palettes and
those things.
Yeah, I do that, and I usually like the color palettes and get a lot of inspiration from the video games. So it's like, yeah. And actually, my boyfriend likes to play a lot, so we buy a lot of the art books, and we love the way the video games when they are interesting. Like for instance, Dishonored. I don't know if you know it. They have a very good art, and I get a lot of inspiration there because I like to go like with darker colors sometimes, and I get inspiration from video and sometimes yes, I do get inspiration from movies, like getting sometimes when the filters they put, you know, for your last question, they go with reds to give emphasis on something. Yes, I usually take into look at that and take into try to put it in my comics, try to do what they do, you know, because they're experts, of course. And your second question was?
If you thought that you could color a black and white book in the sense of a black and white film as opposed to a colored film, there's certainly aspects of using shadows and tones of gray and the like. Would that be applicable for coloring as well, do you think? Or?
I'm sorry because I don't understand. No, I'm really sorry because I'm sorry that I don't understand very well. I speak in Spanish, actually, so it's
like,
and I'm pretty nervous
like
here, so.
Yeah, like working
like in
grayscale,
right.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I got you now.
So just
you.
out of value.
What I actually do with when I color pages is I would have the colors and would make all the page in color, but I would make an adjustment layer right on top of everything and put it in grayscale. In that's the way I see how things may pop and if they differentiate in the whole page, and you
from
can see the values
from
exactly the values and the if you need to put something further away or just to pop something up, and then I would get rid of that adjustment layer. But I usually work with the grayscales.
That's interesting.
Thank you.
What is your question?
Hey. This is another question for the colorists. So, kind of viewing adding color as like something in the ballpark of the like adding something to a comic book as far as like adding like emotions or feeling. How do you guys go about deciding like what colors and what combination of colors to choose?
Oh no!
Kelly, you want to take this one?
That's a difficult question to answer. There are certain colors that we inherently feel a specific way about. Like red is obviously aggressive and angry and violent. And blues we tend to think of as being like sad and emotionally expressive. Yellows are action colors. So like you automatically can color code things in a specific way. So I think that automatically you can use as a starting point for how you're going to choose your palettes. But I have the problem of my brain wants to think realistically. I know that sounds shocking because I've been working on psychedelic books, but it's really hard for me when I look at stuff like the How Sloan Leong colors, and I probably just butchered her name, but when I look at like colorists that do things that are like totally out of the box and like people's skin tones are like green and the backgrounds are purple and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, I can't think that way, and I wish I could, but I think that everybody inherently has, just like with inking or with any other artistic discipline, you inherently have like a style that's within you, just from how your world perspective. So you automatically gravitate towards certain color choices to begin with.
Yeah, I don't know. And then you also have to try and move the palette, you know, and okay, yeah. Oh, this looks better.
Yeah, I shift colors around a lot. Yeah, that's true.
Thank you. And where's our last question, please?
Yes, I would like to ask Veronica and Dini coming from Argentina.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
How did you get started in the profession, and how did you make the jump into DC and Marvel? Is that an astonishing thing?
Well, thank you.
So,
yes.
So far away, even in the internet era.
Yeah. Well, I actually started coloring one of the, my boyfriend is an artist as well, and I started coloring one of his drawings while I was studying graphic design, and we decided to make our own comic book and publish it in Argentina. Actually, it was called Ñoraido. And with that, it was like my, we did like about 5 issues of that. And that was like my portfolio. And I started shopping it through internet. And it was like, I think it was digital webbing that helped me to get my first job.
Yeah, me too.
And it was like, poor paying, and but I didn't care. It was like my first paid job because I was putting all the money before. And that got me to another person who recommended me, and the chain started like that. And then I got to color the Mice Templar, which was by Mike Homing, and he got me to show my portfolio to C.B. Sabotsky.
He's such a good dude.
Yeah, and that's how I got into Marvel. And then I got paired with Dexter Soy, who was actually the artist in the Red Hood and the Outlaws that we're working together. And he got me into DC because we worked on Mrs. Marvel for Marvel, and he liked the way we worked together, how we collaborated. And he got me into DC, and we've been working together like for 4 years now.
That's what happened.
You were from Buenos Aires.
Yes, I work from Buenos Aires.
So, you know, we started a little bit late, but I still want to do a lightning round of answers. And we're going to start with Dave, and we'll move our way down to you. What is your career advice for those that are trying to break in really quick? I mean, other than, you know, don't give up. What would your career advice be, and where can we find more of your work online?
My work is available through our social media links because our website's down, but our website is alargerworld.com, and then we have social media as A Larger World with Instagram and Twitter, so it's easy to contact us. We're also alargerworldstudios@gmail.com, so you can always reach out to me and I can share that kind of stuff. My advice is draw. Live model, draw. It informs everything that you do. One of the things that I've noticed amongst all of us that we're talking is also we're designers. Mm-hmm. We pick, for each story, we pick a certain set of tools, a certain palette that we're going to work in order to create a certain emotion and mood for the story. So study design.
Well, what about you? For those trying to get into inking, where can we find you?
Online. You can find me online. I have a professional page on Facebook, Lebeau Underwood, professional comic book inker. I'm also on DeviantArt as well, or you can just simply Google my name, and I'm quite sure a lot of stuff will pop up. As far as advice, the most valuable advice I can give to any person who wants to be an inker is that you have to have a very competitive spirit. I remember when I was starting out and wanting to work at Marvel in DC, an editor told me this, is actually Neil Adams told me this as well. He said that your competition is not the worst, but the best at both companies, at all companies. So you have to approach it from that standpoint that you have to at least be as good or better than the people who are already working today. You know, and that takes a lot of work. You also have to familiarize yourself with all the tools of the trade, whether that's inking digitally, whether that's working in brushes, whether that's working with nibs. You have to become fluent in each and every aspect of that. Because that's going to help your career out, you know, as you go on. So the best advice I can give, be fluent. You know, study, practice. You know, if you think you're good, realize you can become better and work at it and become better. That's it.
Kelly, what about you?
I would say be active on Twitter. seriously, like, everybody in the comic industry industry practically is on Twitter. I've gotten a lot of jobs off Twitter. There's community. Go to conventions, make yourself known, ask questions, have a portfolio, do work, make comics. Your first gigs are probably either going to be unpaid or really low paid. None of us are up here for like the money. We're up here because we love making comics. So I would say do the work. Yeah. And the other thing is nobody wants to work with a jerk because there's enough cool people. Be friendly, meet your deadlines, and you'll continue to get work. And you can find me online on Twitter at Wasted Wings. I keep it real emo. So if you want to follow my angry rants on Twitter, feel free.
Okay, I would say for me, my career was developed because of networking and because I did my job the best I could every time I could. And it didn't matter if I got paid the best or nothing. It was like I did my best in every single page I had the opportunity to work for. And that got me to the person who hired me, recommend me to someone else. And well, I think that's very important. Just give your best in every single thing you do. Draw, ink, color, letter, whatever. Just do your best in what you're doing. And that will lead you to more jobs and references. And I think that's it.
Yeah.
And you can find me at veragandini.blogspot.com.
Awesome. So thank you. And if you guys had any questions for them, I'm sure they'd be happy to answer them after the panel. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.